Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I'm one of your hosts, Anna, and I'm here with my two book besties, Christina and Kim.
Hey, hi, everyone.
Hey, hey.
We are really excited about tonight's episode.
Yeah.
It is National Women's History Month, and we have been pretty active on our social media pages promoting lots of various female authors and the books that they write.
Yes.
And the worlds they create. And we decided to do a special episode this week where we are featuring a few female authors. And we're really excited about it because we actually, it's a spoiler-free episode, which it will be interesting to do.
Yeah. We're going to try our darndest. We sure are.
We really
Sometimes
are.
We get a little passionate, but we are going to rein that in.
We will rein the passion in.
Rein the spoiler passion in. Yeah.
it's definitely going to be tricky, especially because we purposefully each chose a book that none of the other two have read yet.
Yeah.
So
yes.
We're really kind of doing like a little review of the book to kind of get everyone excited, mm-hmm. as well as talk about the authors and just these amazing characters and stories that they've created.
So
yeah,
good.
We had originally planned on discussing our favorite female authors, but then when we actually sat down to make that list, it was just massive.
We had like 10 to 12 authors, and we were like, we really want this to be a shorter episode.
Yeah.
And now this is like 4 hours.
Yeah, we would have added more and more. We would have been here for days. So we decided to go another direction and each pick a book that the other ones haven't read by a great female author. And of course, you know, we would be remiss if we're talking about female authors in general to not mention, you know, our queen Sarah J. Maas, or Jennifer Armentrout, or Cassandra Clare, or Leah Bardugo,
Danielle Jensen,
mm. just like all of these amazing, amazing women. But when it comes to a lot of those incredible women, we either have recently done episodes on one of their books, or we are planning to do them in the near future. So instead, we kind of want to take this time to talk about, you know, some authors and some books we haven't gotten to talk about yet that really inspired us, and, you know, take the time to elevate the voices of those really incredible female authors that really
yes.
left their mark on us with their stories, and really use this time for that.
Yay!
Okay, yeah. Should we get started?
Yes, let's do it.
I'm so excited too.
Okay. Oh, do I start? I've started.
Yeah, great. Christina, you're up.
Okay. So, guys, I'm so excited. Okay, so the book I have brought is Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi, and it is truly amazing. You guys are going to love it. I'm smiling so big as I'm looking at you both telling you this. I'm just so excited.
I've already bought it. I have it on my Kindle ready to go because you've been raving about it.
Okay, so it's the first in a trilogy. This came out in 2018. And then the second book, the sequel, is called Children of Virtue and Vengeance. That came out in 2019. And then the third book is slated to come out this year. And it's already going to be a movie. So
what?
Get ready for that.
Really?
What?
Yes. Yeah. It's already, after the first book, she signed a movie deal for the trilogy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, now I have to read it.
Yes. Also, Tomi, incredible. When the first book came out, she was 24.
Are you serious?
Yes.
What?
She was 24. Oh, and
that's like Adele shit.
That really is.
Yeah. When the book came out, and she immediately became New York Times bestseller, and she's just incredible. So she is a Nigerian-American author, and she said that the fantasy world that the book is set in is directly inspired by her West African heritage, which is really cool. And she tells the story on Jimmy Fallon, her interview on Jimmy Fallon. She told this story about how she was in Brazil studying Western African mythology, and she was in this gift shop because it was raining and she couldn't get her hair wet. And so she was trying to like look like she was interested, like she was going to buy something so they wouldn't like think it's weird. She was just like hanging out in this gift shop. And she found this or saw this poster of the Orisha, which are these African gods and goddesses. And it just blew her away. And she saw herself in this picture, in this poster. And she said something to the effect of like, I had just never imagined Black and African like gods and goddesses, and it just like blew her mind. And she was just so inspired by it, and the story just like kind of exploded from there. Our lead's name is Zaylee, and she is this badass, amazing, just like fierce warrior girl who also just has this really good heart. So in this world, the Magi are the magic wielders, and their children are called diviners. And if you're a child of Magi and you get the magic, then you're a diviner. And not all the kids get it. Like her brother, for instance, does not have magic. But then you have to go through this training and like this rite of passage as a diviner, and then you become a Magi. Now, the big bad evil in the book is the king. Big bad evil king.
Big bad evil
king. So big bad evil king wipes out magic.
Oh, so it's like a little throne of glass thing.
I was about to say
that. I'm digging this.
So, yes. So he wipes out magic, he kills the Magi, and everyone left with magic, he takes their magic away.
Oh.
And so that's called the raid. They refer to it as the raid when the king takes all the magic, kills the Magi. And when the raid happened, Zaylee's mother was killed really brutally and awfully in front of her, and her magic was taken. So... Oh. It's also really interesting the way they do the raid, because I feel like in books like this, typically the big thing, the big big event that has caused the obsessive state that we're in is so far in the past that the lead doesn't remember it happening. It's just like, this is what life is. And she directly remembers it. She was a child, but it's still like emotional trauma for her. Like she lived it. So, yes, okay. We open the book with Zaylee. She's dealing with that grief still so many years later, but she's still training and learning the ways of the Magi and everything. Then through a sequence of events, she becomes friends with the crown princess, and she's amazing, and her name is Amari. So she is our other female lead, Amari, and she's the princess.
She's the daughter of the big bad king?
Yeah. Yes. So
interesting.
They become friends, and... pretty much then our big plot is Zaylee and Amari, the princess, and Zaylee's brother, Zane, go on a journey and a quest to restore magic to their people. And then throughout this, through also a sequence of events, the prince, so Amari's
brother,
Inan, pursues them on their journey, then gets mixed up in the group. So pretty much the story is the four of them going on this adventure through this beautiful world. And it's just so much fun getting to know these characters. And especially the two female leads are so well done, and they're very different. Like at the beginning, they really don't even get along. And then you see them both grow and learn from each other, and their friendship grows, and it's just this beautiful arc separately and together. And it's just, it's really, really great, beautiful, strong female friendship writing.
I love that.
Yes. Also, there's some enemies to lovers. Not going to tell you who, but there's
love and enemies to lovers.
Love me some. but everything, just like the magic system's different, and everything just like kind of feels new and fresh and exciting. And there's just like these beautiful depths, the characters and the world. And like, we're riding through the jungle on this big, huge lion. And then like, she's doing all of this while also making really powerful and important statements and commentary on racism and police brutality and oppression. Like, she is.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's really, really just so well done. And when you read it, you have to read her author's note at the end. It's like this beautiful call to action, and it's really, really beautiful. So loved it. Loved the message. Loved the characters. Highly recommend it. Children of Blood and Bone. Tomi Adeyemi.
Oh, that sounds really.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm glad I bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go buy it now.
And exactly.
I love that the third one is coming out. Like, I love that it's going to be done this year, so we don't have to wait.
Yeah. I just kind of focused on the first book, but now you can start it and then
Yeah, exactly. Because I hate when, like, you want to start a series, but you're like, oh, the first one, like, well, which will be a good segue into mine, but, like, I don't hate it, but I'm like, no, now I have to wait because I want to know what's going on.
I know. Yes. Okay. So, Kim, tell us about your book.
Yay. All right, Kim, your turn. Okay. You're up.
Yay.
Bring it.
So I read Legendborn by Tracy Dion, and you guys, it is absolutely amazing. I devoured this book. I read it in like two sittings, and I got food poisoning in between, and you know a book is amazing when I was laying there like puking my guts up and wondering like, what's happening with Bree?
Oh, poor you,
Kim. I know, it was awful. But
true sign of a good book, really.
I powered through.
That is a testament.
It truly is. Like, I loved this book so much. I'm so happy I read it. It is incredible. So the story follows Bree. She is 16 years old, and her mother just tragically died in a car accident. And she is obviously really struggling with that. And this book deals so much with grief and loss and the trauma that happens when you lose a loved one. And it was handled so beautifully and so wonderfully. And the quotes from this book about grief and love and loss alone are some of the most beautiful things I've ever read in my entire life. I did not expect to get this kind of emotional, like, I don't want to say depth in a negative way, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't go into YA fantasy thinking, like, I'm going to have, like, a mini therapy session about, like, grief and loss and love and race. And just this, it was such a, the messages in this book were incredible. So, bigger picture is this story is essentially a loose retelling of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table combined with something called what Tracy calls rootcraft, which is steeped in Southern folk traditions. And I'll touch more on that in a minute, but
that's so cool.
Yeah. So Tracy Dion has been a fan of King Arthur for years, and she wrote in the back about how she loves that there's, like, no one text that tells, like, the true story because everyone's just kind of taken it.
Oh, that's so true.
Their own. Like, there's no one
thing. I never thought about that.
And she was like, so I just kind of hope that Legendborn can be, like, another piece to King Arthur's story.
Oh, that's really neat.
And I love that. She was like, I'm obsessed with King Arthur, and I wanted to do a story about it. But the way she weaves the Southern folk traditions and this beautiful story about this girl who lost her mother so young and so tragically, and how she's grieving and dealing with that or not dealing with it at first. Bree decides to enroll in a residential program for high schoolers at UNC Chapel Hill. And she kind of...
Is this current? Like, it's like a...
Yeah, current day.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, current day with, like, you know, magic.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
As one does.
Yeah. So Bree shows up at this school. She's angry. She's grieving. And the first night they go cliff diving. She doesn't go, but they go cliff diving. So basically she witnesses, like, a magical attack her very first night there. And she has no idea what's going on. And it's like a flying demon. And she learns about this secret society on campus, which UNC Chapel Hill actually does have secret societies.
Oh, do they?
And so, So Tracy, like, kind of made a play on that. But obviously, like, this secret society, it was like hiding in plain sight because it's actually like the Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, that's so cool.
And they're called.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so, like, everyone knows about the secret societies in real life and in the book, but, like, they're parading as a secret society, but they're actually, like, magical. They're called They're called Legendborn. So in this book, Shadowborns are what they call demons, and Legendborns are the knights that are pledged to, they pledge an oath to protect humans, which they call once-borns because they only live once.
Oh,
YOLO. they are pledged to protect them from these demons. And so this yes. society is called Legendborns. There's also, so Merlin, so there's
Merlin. Oh, is there a Merlin?
In this book. There's Merlin.
Is his name Merlin?
And they, no, they're like, it's like a category okay. of people. So there's Merlins who are, like they're, it's like he's a mage and he calls himself a Merlin and they are essentially, they have magic. They create what's called ether and they can like take it from the air and the ground and the elements around them and do magic with it. And that's how they help kill demons. They kind of like hunt demons that way. And they work with the Legendborn. They're all in this society together. So she sees this attack and this Merlin tries to wipe her memory, but it doesn't work on her and she remembers.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ooh.
And she remember this is none of this is a spoiler. So the night that her mother died, she remembers someone at the hospital trying to wipe her memory away. And she has like a hint of it. And she's like, wait a minute. I don't remember this. Like, I don't remember this happening at the hospital. Yeah. Why am I remembering it now?
Just like a little bit.
And a little bit unlocked to where she's like, these people have something to do with my mother's death.
Yes.
So she decides to infiltrate secret society and find out what the heck is going on and what they have to do with her mother's death, because a Merlin was at the hospital and tried to wipe her and her dad's memory of what happened to her mom.
Wow.
So she meets this guy who was in the secret society, but like is out of it now and wants nothing to do with it. And she basically forces him to sponsor her to be in this tournament of...
Okay.
The hierarchy of the system, you guys know I'm a slut for some good world building.
And oh, I know you are, girl.
This book, like the structure of the society, and there's pages and squires and everything.
Yes.
So it's like a magical competition, and whoever wins gets to be like the right-hand man to the heirs of the Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the premise of the whole story. She's trying to figure out what is going on with her mom. She wants to get revenge. She wants to figure out what happened. And she thinks that this society is the way to do it. And along the way, she gets swept up in way more than she bargained for. And she starts learning more about the society.
Oh, I love it.
But she also meets up with a woman. Her dad sets up a therapy sessions with her to help work through her grief with her mom. And this woman practices rootcraft, which is actually a real thing. So Tracy said, I took inspiration from African-American history and spiritual traditions. In particular, I focused on root work, also known as hoodoo or conjure. Root work was developed by enslaved Africans and their descendants under American slavery, and it can be traced from its historic origins to varied practices in present-day African-American communities. So it is a real thing. Which I did not know. I thought she made it up, but it's...
Oh, wow. Cool.
So there's a side part going on about Bree connecting with her ancestors, and...
Yeah.
It was so interesting. This university is set in the South, and the juxtaposition of Bree being... she's a young Black woman, and standing on this campus, there is a graveyard of Black slaves that is, like, they're all unmarked... And there's no stones or anything. And it's a real place. And she said, because for me and many other Black people in the South, it feels as if the very soil that helped grow this country is soaked with the acknowledged and unacknowledged blood, sweat, and tears of enslaved Africans and their descendants. And in truth, it is. So that's one of the reasons she chose to use the term root when speaking about rootcraft. Because she says that it's different for... different African-American communities will call it different things. And so she chose that because truly she feels like the roots of this country were built by slaves. Oh, wow. And so Bree has that acknowledgement too, that she's walking on ground that was built by her ancestors. Yeah. And it is just the way that, that Tracy Dion weaves all of this together is so incredible. And the diversity in this book, Bree is Black. Her best friend is Taiwanese American and is a lesbian. There's also a non-binary character. There's multiple bi and gay characters. And it is just, it's so natural. It's so organic. It's so beautiful, just as it should be. It's so wonderful, you guys. I know.
I'm really excited.
There's like a little love interest moment.
I was going to ask, is there a romance situation?
There is.
Okay.
And it's,
you know, I need a romance
cute.
Girl.
Oh, it is. The romance is not like, it's no Accord of Silver Fox.
I just need a hint of one. I just need one. I just need it there somewhere in the...
It's emotionally there. And there's also like a bad boy character that like Bree's like... Ooh. Has a very complicated relationship with that I'm seeing something. I don't know, but it could be there. Could be there. But I cannot recommend this book enough. It deserves it. It has gotten a lot of hype, but I truly feel like it deserves more. Like, it's so good. Yeah. I'll shut up about it now, but like, you must read it.
I'm so excited.
I am in. I am going to read it. TBR. I know, TBR. Top, done. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, all right, Anna.
Okay, Anna.
Okay. Hit us with it.
So I am so excited to talk about this book. I chose the Imperium Trilogy by Claire Legrand. I'm only going to talk about the first book, Furyborn. I've read all three. They're all out, obviously. The third one came out, I think it came out in this past October. So you both know that I'm very hard to, like, surprise in books.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
The second book.
You know everything. Books ahead.
I'm Sherlock Holmes when it comes to books.
100 Yes, that is so true.
But this one surprised me, and I was like, you little trickster, Claire. Didn't see that coming.
You tricky trickster.
If I didn't want to read it before.
That is high praise from Anna, because I've never heard such a thing.
So I'm really excited to talk about this book. So a little, just kind of backstory on Claire or where she came up with this idea. I was listening to a few interviews, and apparently she was 18 years old and she came up with the idea. And she said she was sitting on a plane, which is so weird because this is like Sarah J. Maas talking about Crescent City too.
Totally.
So she said she was listening to Lord of the Rings, and she said she just had this vision of the main character of this girl, who's, her name is Riel. And she had the vision of who Riel is at the end of the third book. And and she was like, so then it was almost like working backwards. I started asking myself all these questions, like, who is this person and what is she doing and why does she behave this way? And she said that kind of ended up being the format for the book, because you open the first book in the prologue. So this is not giving anything away. But in the prologue, Riel is giving birth to her daughter. And it, and so you know that she has this daughter. And there's a little boy, Simon, in it. And there is destruction. It's like war-torn. And Riel has all this power. And she's a danger, basically, kind of to everyone. And she's trying to protect the baby. And she tells Simon to take the baby to this other kingdom. And so it starts that way with Simon.
Wait, sorry, this is
on the prologue. It's like crazy, which I love, because it's one of those books where like it just grabs you right away and you're like, what is going on? And then when the book actually starts with chapter one, it's Riel. It might be just like a year earlier, and everything is so different. She's just this girl. It's a really interesting different type of fantasy book, because it spans over 1,000 years. Every chapter alternates between Riel in this one world where it's, you know, kind of ambiguous. It's made up. It's not urban. It's not today. It's not current. And then you go 1,000 years into the future, and it's almost like a dystopian fantasy world. And there's a young girl.
Sold.
I know.
Sold.
That is so cool.
It's
sign me up. Hold on.
It's bizarre.
What?
Yeah.
In the future?
Okay. Yes. So that it's kind, so it's like cool. One of those books where like you're reading a chapter, the chapter ends, and of course the chapter ends on like kind of a cliffhanger, and you're like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? And you turn the page to read the next chapter, but wait, it's not about that character. We've jumped 1,000 years into the future, and now we're reading about a whole new character.
That is so crazy.
Yeah, that's so and of course, cool. As you're reading it, you start to see tie-ins. Okay.
I was gonna say, are they connected?
Of course.
Are the
time
crazy? Okay.
In
okay,
this
okay,
world,
okay.
There are magic wielders. And there are 7 elements that, you know, you can kind of, that a magic wielder will identify strongly with, like water, air, metal, earth, etc. And Riel is the only person in existence who can use all 7 of the, like, elements.
Oh, wow.
And she's kept it hidden.
So she's important.
She's very important. And she's kept it hidden because her father was worried that, you know, she'd be ostracized or... you know, executed for her power because she's, you know, actually very powerful.
Right.
And as I'm sure we can all see where that's going. Like, that's never a good idea to, like, suppress your magic in any of these books.
Let it out, girl.
Nothing bad has ever happened when we suppress magic.
And so, you know, Riel's power scares a lot of people because in the first, you know, in the beginning of the book, it becomes apparent she's been hiding it for years, and all of a sudden her magic, she has to use it to save the crown prince's life, and they're best friends. And she saves his life, and she uses a magic that people didn't know that she could use. And everyone freaks out because there's a prophecy. And the prophecy states that there's going to, one day there will rise a sun queen and a blood queen. And as you can probably guess, like, the Sun Queen is like, yay, we like her. And the Blood Queen is like, death and destruction. And they don't know who Riel is.
I love a good prophecy.
And they don't know who Riel is.
Love a good prophecy.
So Riel's whole storyline is the kingdom has basically decided to put her through 7 trials to test all 7 elements of her magic. And if she can pass them, then yay, she's a Sun Queen and she gets anointed the Sun Queen. If she fails, she's the Blood Queen and she gets executed.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Stakes high.
Girl.
Right. So.
You gotta do real well in these tests.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot. There's a lot going on in this book, but it's, I gotta give Claire LeGrand credit. Like, when you're reading it, it makes sense, and her world building is just incredible because she takes her time. And because you kind of go chapter by chapter alternating between Riel's world and then what the world is like 1,000 years later. It's her same world, but 1,000 years later.
That's so cool.
It's really interesting because you're seeing what's happening in Riel's time period. And when you jump 1,000 years into the future, it's like everything has gone to hell and it's dystopian, basically. It's like the dystopian Riel's world. And you're seeing like what could happen if everything went wrong.
Yeah.
And it's really cool, but it goes back to like the prologue when she's sending her baby with Simon and she tells Simon, who is a Mark, a descendant of an angel and a human, and she says, I need you to protect my baby. You need to take her to this other kingdom. Simon is like, I think he's like 8 years old. And and he's, you know, traumatized, something happens, and he tries to time walk with the baby to take her to this kingdom, that the nearby kingdom, and something goes wrong, and the baby gets ripped from him. And the last thing that Riel gives to Simon to like give to the baby is this little necklace with a horse on it. And when we fast forward to 1,000 years into the future, there's a girl, and she has a necklace.
With a horse on it.
But she has another mother and she has a father, and it's, you're not sure where the horse pendant came from. Is she this daughter, or is it something that has been passed down in her family? Like, you're not quite sure where we are. And it's really interesting. And of course, within a few chapters, Simon shows up in this 1,000-year future. And it's like, it is a trip, you guys. It's so fascinating to read.
Yeah.
And of course there's a love interest, but
hello.
But it's really, it's a very action packed and it's a very good read. I mean, Claire LeGrand has really created an incredible universe with some great characters.
Oh my gosh. I cannot wait to read it.
I am so excited that you told us about this one, because I
know, me too.
I feel like I've seen this book around a lot, and I guess I didn't really know what it was about. I thought maybe I did, but this is just blowing my mind, the whole thousand years ahead of time thing. So I am so excited about this. This is great.
Yeah, same.
It was a really fun read. Highly recommend.
Highly recommend. Yes. Okay, so should we talk about some of our favorite female heroines, female characters, female friendships?
Let's talk about our favorite female characters.
I mean, I feel like when we were making this list, I was really struck by the fact that, you know, these fictional women can be role models for us too, yes. You know, even as mm-hmm. fictional women, and, you know, whether it's defeating some big bad evil king or just, you know, kind of being there for a friend in a really important moment, you know, light it up, or like, you know, just no matter what, it's like, it's just so wonderful how these authors can create these female characters that inspire us and, you know, really make the book, especially female friendships.
Yes.
So, okay. Yeah. Speaking of light it up though, let's talk about Crescent City. Okay.
So we have to be really careful because, guys,
Kim's covering her ears.
Kim has never read the book, which she would have. This is partly Christine and I. We have told her to not read it now until we all reread it together, or Christine and I reread it with her.
Well, I want to wait till the second one comes out so I can read it, like, back to back.
It's really tricky because we have to be very careful when we say things, and she has to be careful when she's on social media.
Very careful. I'm like, nope, scrolling.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
But this also helps us a little bit, Kim, because it would be really easy for me and Anna to just go off the rails here and talk about Bryce and Danica. So this helps us, like, hone it in, rein it in a little bit, and keep it spoiler free.
I'm here for you guys. I'm here for you.
Thank you.
I'm, like, actually tearing up. Like, this, I love them so much. I don't know that I have a female friendship that I love more. The 13 is very close for me because
that is my true love.
We're not doing a spoiler episode, but I love the 13.
Truly.
How could you not?
Yeah, but Bryce and Danica, I think the reason I love them so much is because she makes their friendship kind of the center through the entire story. And it's not like, it's not a love. I mean, of course, there's a love interest in Crescent City, but that love interest isn't actually the love that is what's important to the whole book. It's this female bond and friendship and this best friends, like, you know, do or die, ride. What is it saying?
Ride or die.
They're ride or die.
Whoa! ride or do.
The ride or do.
What's happening?
Okay, sorry. It's that ride or die love, and I don't know. We would all be so lucky to have somebody like Bryce or Danica as our best friend.
I completely agree, and I think the way she writes it, it is very relatable and feels very real.
It's like from Grey's Anatomy when you have, if you've ever read that book, it's like you know when Christina and Meredith are like, she's my person.
Yes.
That's how this is. It's Bryce is Danica's person and Danica is Bryce's person. And
yes, and it's beautiful.
They are friendship lobsters if you watch Friends.
That one I get. You will see, Kim.
I know we talk about it. I feel like we're talking about it so much, so we just need to shut up about it.
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys,
so
I cannot wait.
Okay.
Let's talk about the 13.
My okay, babies.
So the 13 is also difficult without spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just like their bond and what they go through together and separately throughout the series is just, if you had told me that I would love the 13 based on the first scene that we meet them, I would be like, duh.
I'd be like, no fucking way.
No fucking
way. No way.
Also, sorry for context, the 13 is from the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas.
They're a coven of
witches. They are a coven of witches.
They're just badass.
They're badass bitches.
And they like, are, they're scary awesome.
They're terrifying.
And something I think that's really cool about the 13 is they are these, like, fierce, badass, like, actually sometimes scary women.
Yeah.
But they are each other's constant in this mm-hmm. scary, messy, yeah. evil world. And they are raised and their lives are such where they are not supposed to show emotion. They don't have emotion. Sometimes they're, you know, and the, for a lot of them, a lot of 13, really the only time we see emotion is when they are
together
or interacting with each
yes.
other. And it's just such, it's like the most, I think maybe one of the most like true sisterhood.
Mm. Yes.
Like, examples that
and I think
that they have with each other, like the, I don't even know if love is the right word, because like, again, like you said, they're not emotional beings,
but when we see it, it's so there, it's almost,
it's
like
so there,
and it's really only
they're
for each
loyalty.
Other
well and, like, and it just goes back to like Sarah J. Maas's, you know, use of found family, you know, like they're
yes,
each other's
yes.
found family, and they've
yes,
come
they
together
are.
And they've bonded in a way that's outside of the norm of their race, so to speak, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally. Beautiful. It's so heartwarming. I mean, it just, their story arc is one
all
of my
feels.
Absolute favorites.
Okay, so since, speaking of Sarah J. Maas, I feel like, you know, badass female heroines, we have to talk about Aelin.
Aelin Galathinius.
Yes.
Aelin.
Oh, I always say Galathinius.
Interesting.
I mean,
oh,
same
I say
thing.
Galathinius.
Yeah. Aelin Ashriver Galathinius.
I'm probably
such a
wrong.
Great
oh, I say
name.
Ash River.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
I'm probably wrong. Okay, so her...
Oh, gosh.
Something that strikes me about her that's just so... we could go on and on about her for a really long time, but...
I really
her
could.
Journey and her strength, the thing she has been through, and the amount of badassery that she is. Like, I mean, she's a famous assassin at 17. Like, she is a badass woman.
Truly.
So, I think the amount of incredible strength and, you know... her killing calm and all this stuff, but then we also are allowed to see her, like, she loves clothes and she loves,
she loves fashion,
like chocolate
oh,
cake
yeah, she
and
does.
She loves reading and she loves these things,
she loves music,
just,
playing
I
the piano
really, yeah, and I appreciate the fact that Sarah made her so multifaceted to where she's not just
yes.
this
yeah.
this like what we would think of as a like strong badass woman. She also has layers that we relate to, like, oh, you know, that you every woman can kind of relate to and feel themselves.
What
in.
Sarah horrible. Excels at is writing flawed leading ladies.
Yes.
I mean, Bryce, Farah, Aelin, and they all have deep flaws or, so, I mean, and usually something traumatic that's happened to them that's the catalyst uh-huh. for the way that they are. But yet they're also so identifiable and relatable because of their flaws, because it makes you mm-hmm. feel like they're human in a way, even though they might have extreme power or badassery or whatever.
I also think something that's really, I really love that all of her leading ladies have been through some sort of trauma, and that trauma does not make them less strong, and that they mm-hmm. deal with the trauma, they deal with their emotions and their grief, and their, it doesn't happen overnight, and it is a slow journey sometimes.
Yeah.
But that having those emotions and going through hard times does not make them not a strong woman.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
yeah.
keep them from being a strong badassery woman. It's just a part of them that they are working through. But they can still be strong at the same time.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay, who else do we want to talk about?
I want to finish off with Daniel Johnson's Bridge Kingdom and her character, Lara.
I love her.
I love her so much. She's different than the other characters we've talked about
so
far.
She is different, definitely.
You know?
Mm-hmm. she is a badass woman, but she also is, she has this like fierce protectiveness and the sense of justice and this like willingness to sacrifice herself for what she thinks is right. Like she's
acting for the good of something greater than herself.
Yeah.
Like she very much, the conflict is that she's doing what she believes is her duty.
Yeah. And she's willing to sacrifice her well-being for the cause.
Her happiness.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And we see her, she's being trained with her 12 half-sisters as spies since she was a child. Gosh. So
the
like,
beginning of that book, you guys.
Yeah.
That scene, I mean, obviously I'm not going to say anything, but like, this is another book similar to Furyborn, I think, that just sucks you in right away. And Laura is put in a very difficult situation.
That
and
opening scene is like, what?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You don't, you're like, didn't see that coming. Okay.
Nope. You're like, wait, what did I just read?
And
like,
it's,
what just
And
what
it's
just
not like it's a
here?
Scene. I think it's like almost like a, I would say the first chapter.
Yeah, it's a new, well, yes, it's an entire chapter and there's a whole build up and then all of a sudden something happens and you're just like, what heck just happened?
Which is like, Danielle, applause, girl. I love these books so much. I think really she is a great example of a great, great female lead.
You know, I know when an author has written an amazing character when I get very frustrated. And I don't mean frustrated like, sorry, Cassandra Clare, but like, when I don't mean frustrated and like I'm frustrated with these characters and where this is going. I just mean frustrated because you're like, no, why is this happening? Why are you doing this?
Yes, you're so invested.
So invested in this character and the story. And she does that with me and Laura so many times in this book because
yes. I agree.
Laura is, she's trained to be a spy, an assassin, a mastermind of all of those things. And
totally.
She's really good at her job.
She is
and
good.
There are times where, you know, she has her eye on the prize and she's doing what she's supposed to be doing. And you're just like,
I know it breaks your heart, but you also like have so much respect for her because she grapples with that too.
Yeah.
You know, she really struggles with like, is this what I want anymore? I thought I went into this and I thought I knew what I wanted and I thought I knew what I was doing and what my mission was. Mm-hmm. And now as time has gone on, like things have changed, but I still have that duty inside myself to my kingdom and my family and everything else. But now I don't know. She's just,
I think Christina said it well in the beginning. She has a very, very, very strong sense of justice and she's very self-sacrificing.
Yes, definitely.
And part of the frustration I think that we feel with her a lot of the book is that Danielle Jensen does such a good job of developing her character that when she does these frustrating things, you understand where she's coming from and you understand her reasoning.
It's heartbreaking because
of
that. Yes. Because you get it, but you're also like,
it's so frustrating.
No.
But
yes,
we're so
but
close.
No,
yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Totally.
I love her. Her and my sweet angel boy, Aaron.
I know.
I miss him so much. Like, I actively miss him like he's a real person. It's weird.
You know, I do too. I really do. I'm
excited to read her next book.
When are we going to reread those books?
We got to do that.
We'll dedicate podcast episodes to it.
100%.
This was really fun to talk about. I loved hearing both
really
of the books that you guys read and talking about them. It makes me really excited to read.
Yes.
I love that we did this. Each read a book that the others haven't read and got to like talk about it.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And then our next episode.
Yes.
So next episode's gonna be really fun.
Ooh, yes.
So we're gonna be talking about From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout.
Oh my gosh!
I'm
so excited.
Oh my gosh.
Book three comes out at the end of April. And we have book one and book two getting their own episodes coming like first and second week of April. So we're so excited.
Yes. So we're here to refresh you. We're here if you want to read along with us. We are here for all the From Blood and Ash things. We are so excited about it.
Cannot wait.
So we will see you back here for that next episode on the first From Blood and Ash. But in the meantime, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And we can't wait to see you back here.
Yay!
Happy
reading.
Thanks for listening.
Everyone. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.